Hi, I'm Josh, and my fruits are not so much forbidden as like strongly discouraged, but you can use your own discretion.
Hey, I'm Matt, and wait, that's 2 weeks ago. Shit, I forgot the movies. Okay, the Scarecrow is my favorite Wizard of Oz character, but he has a dark past. It's very rapey.
Yeah, depending
That
on
is a straw man
the
argument.
telling.
Straw man argument. Damn it, that was the I left a joke on the table.
I like that. So, like, I had this thought after I finally got through watching The Mummy, the little Lee Cronin's The Mummy, rather, where I was walking through the grocery store. I don't know if I was just distracted or, well, didn't want to go to work or whatever's going on, and I kept seeing products like walking around the grocery store, and my brain kept going like, Lee Cronin's bleach spray and Lee Cronin's pasta,
Lee Cronin's foot powder.
and it was so silly. I was just giggling to myself, probably like it's like a crazy person, but I was just like, I was just, and I think it was like the was it the pasta that was, that's what it was. Yeah, the Lee Cronin's, my brain went Lee Cronin's farfalle. Okay, brain, you go sit down now. You go have some nice tea and just take a breather.
And we're just waiting for Lee Cronin's Spaceballs, the movie, the musical. And this is Harsh a Hot Dog.
Yes, sir.
First up, we have a short this week called The Next Floor, or just Next Floor,
Next Floor.
Próximo Nivel, we're going to say, next level, or Piso, perhaps, Próximo Piso, if you want to, a Piso Mahat. This is a short by Denis Villeneuve, who's I missed his name in the credits, so I didn't see that. All I saw was like, wow, this is the most fucking Frenchest thing that's ever Frenched.
Right, forgetting like, oh, of course, that makes sense.
Because in the opening credit is just like, you know, and Hon Fa Fa Fong and Hanja Fa Ho 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 is also in there. Oh. That dude hardly ever gets work. It's amazing. So this is like a kind of a banquet table around which sit a bunch of people who many of them benefit from the fact that sometimes French just shows up weird in your face.
Yeah.
Like think of like City of Lost Children kind of thing.
Yes,
You know, like
that's exactly
Jean-Pierre
right.
Jeanway just has like an eye for weird ass French faces. So there's a few of those and like a few of just kind of aristocratic looking folks. And
Yeah, the non-Euclidean French face is well represented here.
dude, you never go full non-Euclidean. That is so
Super
insulting.
offensive.
Yeah.
This picture of Robert Downey Jr. in like a little beret with like a little pencil mustache.
You're
I'm
missing
getting
some
all
context. You
Well,
filthy.
speaking of context, do you guys think that there's like an allegory or a theme to this short, or is it just kind of cool and funny?
I thought it was like rich people are terrible.
You think? I couldn't tell. I thought it was pretty subtle.
Yeah, because you have like. So all these fancy people, right, sitting around a table, they've got a string quartet playing and people just serving them endless food and
Endless
just
food that is mostly endangered or hard to get animals.
And gross and fleshy. Like there's a rhinoceros at one point. There's like
Like a shark.
baby, some kind of baby rodent in like
Yeah.
fully cooked, like just kind of gross looking. Very feral looking, and they're all eating freakishly fast, and not
Yep.
even in just like a greedy way, but in a just like, let us get this fucking job done
Yeah,
way.
we want as much of this as possible.
Yeah.
Like it's a contest to eat more than the other people.
And
Yeah.
at one point, the floor starts to rumble, and the table just falls through the floor. And the waiter leans over to the intercom and goes, next floor. And they all just traipse downstairs, the chandelier descends through the hole in the floor to be above the table again, and they proceed to continue to serve them. And it just does that a couple of times until they fall and they just keep falling.
And then the guy
And
just looks at the camera.
yeah, and he's like, c'est la guerre, you know? Like,
This is so gorgeous. And this part of what made me, aside from how beautiful it is and well done, part of what made me really like this is I know recently, I can't remember exactly which episode, I'd complained about how, like, there are times when it makes sense to have eating be as gross as possible in a movie. because you're trying to make a point about a character. But like, even in movies, like I think we talked about like The Substance, like the rich guys being extra gross eating. And I'm like, yeah, but that also kind of goes against like the character that they're supposed to be. But I'm like, I get it. People try to have people eat gross in movies. And this one, I'm like, ah, see, this is when you need the people to make it like all that food, even if it didn't already look off, is nauseating because of the way they're eating. And I thought that was like, this is also fantastic.
If you watch this, wearing headphones, like you're just, I had struggle with that because it's just like, I mean, just like about a couple minutes in, I'm just like, I should really need to unplug my headphones because this is just awful.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, the, yeah, I mean, it has a fantastic look to it for sure. And this filmmaker is such an interesting one because, of course, he's done the Dune movies, but he also did the original Sicario. He did Arrival. Yep. And he did the vastly underrated but badass Prisoners that more people should see.
I don't think I've seen that one.
I've seen
all the others we talked about.
It's real good. Yeah. But he's like, and so he has these moments. There's moments of Arrival that are just so delicate and beautiful. There's moments in Sicario that are just
love that.
Like movie. Michael, like key, like razor's edge. Prime time Michael Mann level of just perfection. And it's sort of like, and then he has these like soft, delicate, beautiful moments in Arrival. And then you watch something like this, and it's sort of like, it's kind of like this, like, it kind of made me think of like, it kind of made me think of that scene in Life of Brian. I think that's not, no, yeah. Not Life of Brian. What am I thinking of?
Meaning of Life.
With the Weffer.
Meaning of Life. That's,
yeah. That's the
one. Yeah, one more bite. And it's like, so it's one of those things where it's like, it has a great look to it, and it's very, very well made. But I kind of just go like, it's like, if the point of it is like all these rich people just, you know, consuming everything, you know, without abandon, like, okay, so then who are the people? Then who are the, like, it's like, it's really, really cool, but I wanted more to it. Like, yeah, just like not so much as like the Damon Wayans right in front of the camera going, you know, message, but it's like, I just wanted just a little bit more to it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there was enough for me to go, yeah, okay, we're saying that like the elite are consuming far more than their fair share, and we as the underclass are but their humble servants that despite watching how much they're consuming and the fact that they're doing it to their own detriment, we are still required to serve.
Yes.
And, you know, as myself and other people we know have been having issues with jobs with issues like that. I was like, yeah, this feels like a little bit of a fuck you to that. And I'm in a bit of a fuck you mood.
So how long do we have to wait before they just fall through the floor and keep falling?
Right. That's kind of what I'm waiting on too.
And only hope that what we're serving them is the enough rope to hang themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it has a very it has an incredible look to it, and I really like there was like the third or fourth time they're shuffling down the stairs,
it does get funnier too.
It gets sillier. There's a bit of a silliness to it, which I think was very smart. I think without that, it could have just gotten too far out. That's what I asked.
It's not like fully, I guess not fully like slapsticky silly, but there's like a wryness to it. You know, just it's a little arch, and I think it's just the right touch where, because those little sequences of the people running down are just enough sprinkled in, so it's not just essentially watching people eat for 10 minutes.
Yeah,
they're just enough of a like, okay, like you've been swimming underwater, pop up, take a breath, back down you go, pop up, take a breath, and then by the end you're like, yeah, good, you guys didn't go down with them. That's awesome.
Well, my favorite shot of the whole thing, outside of the looking down the hole and then like the hopping down the stairs, my favorite shot is the first time they fall through, and then everybody's just kind of still, and the guys shuffle in. They've got the little dusters or whatever else, and the one lady, the one fancy lady on the right hand side, she really leans her hand over one hand or the other hand to wipe the dust off of her gigantic ring.
Yeah,
and then, like, that was like one of my favorite shots of the whole thing, because it's just sort of like, it's like, yep, there you go. It's like perfect.
It's good shit.
It was cool.
Interesting watching as they got a little further down. There was one moment where the waiter goes to put a sausage on the woman's plate, and she waves him away. But as soon as she turns away, he puts the sausage on her plate anyway. It was like, huh, that means something, I'm sure.
And yeah, that one lady, you're right, Joshua. Yeah.
And then after that, you see a couple of times people taking something off of somebody else's plate. And I thought it would be fun if they just started eventually, you know, stabbing each other with their forks, right? Like, that would be a fun way for that to go, is just to, you know, when once the food is gone, to just turn on each other. But I didn't need it as much for the length that this is. I think it clocked in just about right.
Yeah, it's like a little over 10 minutes, which I'm usually a little wary of. Once you hit the 10-minute mark, I know I'm pushing it. But I just thought this looked good enough. But yeah, I think this is any longer and this probably gets a little too hammock-shaped. But yeah, I dig it.
Yeah, I think people should watch it. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
This
movie films for theaters. This
Villeneuve guy is coming places and going places.
Let's go. I'm just breathing hard.
No, sure. Never got you that black light.
Some things are best left unknown.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going, Roxanne, you don't got to turn on the black light. Like, actually, please. Please don't.
Beautiful.
What is this? Blood? Oatmeal?
If we're lucky.
This is the room where Wilford Brimley was strangled by Bob Crane. Man, old Family Guy had it. I'm just going to go
out. Sure did.
But I said, let's talk about Lee Cronin's The Mummy, or La Momia de Lee Cronin. what do you want from me? It's The Mummy of Lee Cronin. That's what it is.
I didn't invent the language.
Can I start with, like, who the fuck is Lee Cronin? To have his name on a movie? Like, come on.
Well, that's not like, his choice. That's the studio.
I understand, like, Wes Craven's, you know, the whatever.
Literally, the real reason is they wanted to make sure no one mistook it for the failed Dark Universe Mummy with Tom Cruise. And they also wanted to make sure no one mistook it for the Brendan Fraser one, as they're making a new version of that, too. Yeah, so they had to make sure that. That's all it was. It's like, I don't think he wanted that either. It was purely the studio going, but no one will know what it, ours is better and different if we don't do that. So yeah,
the thing they could have done as an idea would have been to just not have it be the mummy at all and just have it be like evil lies in the thing with the face or to some other fucking name, because the mummy component is such a non-thing. It's like I will forever be so baffled by sit down for a mummy, like it'll be a cool mummy movie, whatever else. Like, all right, eventually they're gonna get to the mummy. And what is it? What, like 20 minutes left? They're like mummy stuff. Like, hey.
Well, they were like at the beginning, there was, here is a guy covered in beef jerky. I'm like, is he a mummy under the beef jerky? Is that
Because it looked like a bunch of old like weight belts, you know,
A
gym had closed and they were like, these are cheap.
This guy has done a lot of professional wrestling. That's just has a ton of those things. So the reason why I said that, who the fuck is Lee Cronin? Because for a while I thought that he did The Night House, but that's David Bruckner.
Yeah.
And he's the one who did like the kind of disappointing Hellraiser reboot.
Yeah.
And Lee Cronin is the guy who did Evil Dead Rise, which it got me about like half staff, I guess. But compared to like Fede Alvarez's, it wasn't visceral. And that kind of carries over to this one, where nothing has quite the weight that it should, and he doesn't know how to make you feel a hit. And then you compound it by, so looking at the trivia for this is fascinating, because they were like, it's Lee Cronin was approached for this and he resisted because he did not find the story of the mummy very interesting. And then he said, well, I'll do it, but I had this idea that I wanted to do it more like a possession movie. It's like, so you were like, if I don't have to do, it's kind of like, would you like to do the Superman movie? And like, well, sure. If he's not in that fuck ass suit and he doesn't have to fly around and he doesn't have heat vision and there's no kryptonite, because all that shit's dumb.
Oh, comic book movies in the 90s.
Yeah. Like, I want my Superman movie to be about a guy who's kind of strong and thinks he's an alien, but he's crazy. And he's like, okay, but what you have there, sir, is not a Superman movie. So let's not. And this is like, half of this is The Exorcist and the other half is Evil Dead. And it's, that doesn't really leave a half to be The Mummy. All right. One point of order before we start, before we really get into this. When you put the demon in the person and then you wrap them in, what are they wrapping the people in? Is it another layer of skin?
I believe, yeah, it might. I think it's a layer of like old skin that's been inscribed with the spells that contain the mummy until the body decays to the point that the thing would be able to escape, which is why you have to get a fresh body every now and again.
Right, because it seemed really unclear for a bit. It's like, okay, so underneath that, does this person have actual skin? Did they flay the person and then wrap them in the skin? Because when the whole strip comes off of her leg, it looks bloody underneath. But then they have to take off all of the skin so that the demon can come out, and that whole like brother help me undress thing, right? But then she's fine later, and she doesn't look like somebody who's had her entire body rebuilt right at the end. But there's the scene where there's like the piece of skin hanging off of the wheelchair, and he finds out that it's been written on, and like, so basically one way or the other, they have like, they're wrapped in somebody's skin that's covered in fucking writing. It's like, I'm sorry, man. This shit exhausts me. Like, what? So none of the mummification things that happen. That's, you know, that's fine. But you come up with something that's less goddamn convoluted than that.
Yeah, I think that was maybe, to Josh's point, I think that maybe that's, you know, outside of the waiting forever for a mummy thing to occur. But the other thing that I think that kind of got me was ultimately it was like, you know, maybe as you were saying about the kind of development part of this, like, it does kind of, some of the things that occur in this as things are kind of getting into the main flow of it in the middle part of the movie, where it just feels like there's a lot of things that just sort of get introduced where it kind of feels a little bit, not like arbitrary, but it feels a little bit like kind of it's like a 7-year-old telling a story.
Like when they go and visit Giles for exposition and then he just fucks off forever.
Yeah. Well, and it's like the same thing as like, it's the same thing as sort of like the, the interaction with the lady cop and then some of those kinds of things. Like at times she, I'll be careful how I say this. The way that she's written is as if she was part of a program that lets you go be a cop for a day and then go back to the place where they take care of you. And then there's other times where she's like the most brilliant cop that's ever existed. And it's like, it's not because of revelations or learning things. It's like, it's just her character just, and then the police captain that's above her, like neither one of them are written like very consistently like at all. And so that confused me at times. Cause I kept thinking like, okay, is it because of this mummy's curse thing that's like screwing with people and like make him do stuff or whatever? Or it's like, but I was like, no, I don't think so. And it's like, so it's kind of one of those things. Like there were some of those things that are connected to the ground too, that I was very distracted by, you know, at different sort of points. The mother-in-law lady who's just like my God, like it's just sort of so all of her shit's distracting. The hairdresser lady, that one,
and it's I liked her.
See, I found her super distracting. I was just like, you are a pile of cunts, is what you are. Like you're just awful. God Almighty.
I just felt like she was like beamed in from another movie where they're like,
well, that's a wacky, the thing is the actor did a good job.
Yeah, she's just this film's Henrietta, you know?
Yeah.
Like she's there to like pop out her teeth and be kind of funny. And then to also be far too religious, which will of course piss off the demon. That's like having no part of that. And then is there to become the disgusting weird monster, just like the mom in Dead Alive.
Yeah.
And I was like, those are all things I love. So I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to Matt's point, when we were texting about this before, is like, I think if, and this is not meant to be a slight, Matt, but like if you're able to like set aside the blue balling of the mummy component to it, and then you're able to set aside the other part of it, and you just sort of like take it as it's presented, then I think it's not unreasonable for somebody to be like, oh, this gory kind of gnarly, yeah, it's a, thing.
Like hard to watch, gory, sometimes hilariously gory. bonkers, crazy shit happening for like an hour movie. And I was like, fuck yeah, that's awesome. Like, yeah, I like so that. Like, that's why I go see Evil Dead movies.
Well, and like I said, I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. It was just sort of like, you know, I don't know, for whatever reason, I just like, well, for one, another thing too, like this one took me days to finish because it was like, and it was just too late, and I've been trying to get it, and I was trying to get tired, or like I thought I had more time than I had available. So it was taking me a long time to do it. So I think that probably aided to the feeling of being like, God, this is a very long thing.
I did see it in the theater the first time too, which I think probably helped my experience.
That would do it.
So, because then I was just like, holy shit, some of this stuff is just really intense, you know, when it's that big and that loud, and it's like, you're kind of trying to like half look from the side sometimes. Like when she starts like digging into her shin with like a fireplace poker or some shit, I'm like, oh, that's okay. We're going to a different level here. And that's when I was like, okay, like, yeah, because at first there's the mummy stuff is unfamiliar and not really doing much mummying. You know, I was a little confused. I'm like, oh, I guess we're just going to go batshit now. I'm buckled in. Let's go. And it just kept increasing the bonkersness. And like, that's all I wanted. So that was enough for me. Like, yeah. And I don't know. I was trying to think about this. I did rewatch it because I was afraid, like, you know, again, you see something in a theater and sometimes it's a very different thing, but I enjoyed watching it again just a couple days ago. But as I'm trying to think about it, I'm trying to think of a movie with a mummy that's an actual mummy, like wrapped in bandages, that it's ever been scary or particularly interesting. And I don't know that I can think of one.
I wouldn't say scary, but the original,
which is a Peter good Cushing, movie, but it is by no means a horror movie scary, that
but interesting,
you know. Yeah, but would you want to go see in the year of our Lord 2026 Lee Cronin's The Mummy and go, that was interesting? I don't think we would also be saying that was just dull as dishwater as well, you know.
Right, but that's,
so like at least they went for something exciting and bombastic. Mm-hmm.
Well, wasn't there one from like the late 80s? Am I crazy in thinking that?
Yeah, but probably not. That's not why. But
wait, did you? But I swear to God, there was one from like the late 80s
that
was called like Curse the Mummy or something.
Let's see.
Son of a bitch.
The mummy just like stubs his toe and goes, shit, fuck.
Amazing. Well, let's see. There is. Blood from the Mummy's Tomb in 71. Bram Stoker's Legend of the Mummy, 1998. Dawn of the Mummy, 81.
No, this is, I got to think about this some more. It was, it'll come to me eventually, but because what I've always really wanted, and I think that they got to in the original Mummy to a degree that I always thought interesting is like, which is what I was hoping this was going to be, which is that this thing of being like, you go open the mummy's tomb, and you go like, open the tomb, and you, everybody breathes in. And then it's sort of like the mummy's like, I'm going to get you. And then like taking a combination of like taking a bunch of fanatical cultist type people that are like in the shadows, kind of like wanting to resurrect or whatever. And then you also have like this legitimate curse thing that this behaves like Final Destination. That's what I've always wanted from a mummy movie. Is a combination.
Movie in 86 called The Tomb? Is that it? If you go to the list of mummy films on Wikipedia, Scooby Doo is well represented.
Yeah, Scooby Doo can fight a mummy.
But I just think, because that concept, especially growing up, like that concept of like you open the tomb and then this gets on you, is. I find that super interesting. And like the idea of like, you know, mixing in, maybe not to the silly degree, but like that Final Destination component to it is I find that super, to me, I think that'd be really super interesting. Meanwhile, you have people that are like behind the scenes, culty type people that are like wanting to bring about the second coming of the whatever the fuck it is. And it's sort of like, and you have this combination of people threat and then this just supernatural threat that's just stuck on you.
Like, that's like something closer to like the quote unquote curse of like King Tut type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I want that. Like that's what I've wanted out of a movie forever. And it's just sort of like, I don't think I'm ever going to get it, but it's just sort of like, and so in this one, I was like, initially I was like, okay, we've got this thing, they're going to uncover a thing. And then it's going to go all, you know, whatever. But it was really, as Josh says, like, it was really kind of, you know, zeroed in on like the possession component to it, which, I mean, it's not that terrible idea necessarily, but it's not, it's like,
well, yeah, some like part of that exists even in the Brendan Fraser movie, right? Isn't that the whole reason they want to grab what's-her-nuts is so they can resurrect an oxynomon into her body?
Right, but what if she doesn't crawl around talking in basso profundo voice.
Well, so. Yeah, because they're not trying to actually be scary.
Yeah, that's not scary anymore.
I don't think it's scary either, but I'm just saying really like, this, that was not a movie that was trying to be scary.
If like, I could, you know, if I could tell the world just one thing, it would be, no, if I could tell horror directors one thing, it's the fucking exorcist demon voice is not scary anymore. Stop it.
Yeah, for sure.
If you have this like 9-year-old girl who's supposed to be possessed by a demon, her talking in her 9-year-old girl voice and saying fucked up demon things is worse.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because as soon as she starts going, "Red, I will rip your flesh," and you're like, "Well, shut the fuck up, dude." Like we've all heard it before.
Well, you know, it's that lesson too, Joshua. Like, you know, the thing, like, I know I've gone on saying before, like, you know, I really, really, really dearly love the original Exorcist. Like, it's a very,
oh yeah,
it's a very special. Absolutely. That one's in my you know, top, you know, top 10 horror movies of all time, probably top 20 movies of all time. It's just that movie is very, very special to me, mainly because, well, for one thing, it's just like with The Omen, you have all these like legit actors in there. I mean, it just is, you have this great cast. But part of it too is that Reagan like never did anything wrong. It was just this thing that happened to her. And part of what makes it so goddamn scary is, to your point, Josh, about the demon voice thing, when she's really full board, when the way she's talking, she's not yelling and screaming every single moment. There are times where she's just like, there's times where she's talking. And it's like this reminder that she's still like this little girl. And it's sort of like, and it's, and so it's one of those things where they don't go big, they go smaller. And so like in this one, when you have a little girl as the sort of target, which is a big bummer, and it's like, poor little girl didn't do anything wrong. And it's sort of like, but then it just, you forget that's the girl. It pretty much like, she becomes like a imp. It's sort of, yeah, like, you know, like it's just a Gollum's, you know, kind of inbred cousin Sally kind of thing. And it's sort of like, it's not at that point, it becomes a character. It's it's not really a real character at that point. Like I've lost the little girl in that thing. And it's sort of like, and so that's why I think, you know, is outside of the Mummy part of it. And if you're making this movie you're making, like, that's the one thing that just loses me entirely. It's just like, you lose the little girl. Cause like, you know, I go the opposite side of that. I go like Pan's Labyrinth or whatever else. And like, one of the reasons why that works so fucking well is that the little girl is goddamn amazing. Like, she's just amazing. Or go completely non-horror and go like to an Amelie or something, where like, you know, you have this central character and it's critical to keeping things glued together. And like with this one, I initially I was like, I felt so bad for the little girl. And then it was like, I'll lose that entirely because she's this other thing. She's not really that, there's no connection anymore whatsoever. And it's kind of like, oh, she's just another, you know, creature, demon, monster. And it's like, okay, well. That was my other thing that wore me out, you know.
And they do the Shelby Oaks thing where nobody in their right fucking mind would take this person into their home or release that person to someone's home.
Yeah.
The fact that the doctor's like, well, home's the best place for her to be. Like, I don't care that mom is a nurse.
Right.
Like, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Mom would know better than anyone that that's not what you should do.
Yeah. So like that right away is just kind of ridiculous. Like, as soon as they got back to the house, I think nothing worked for me until we got like the whole funeral, like for grandma scene that just went bug nutty. And then it was too late because I was already pissed at it. Because the whole middle bit where they like go see Giles and they have the forensics with the skin and like they're clipping her toenails, but they're these giant talons, and a fucking nurse would know that that's not normal. And they're like, the demon is going to try and break up your family by worming its way into their minds. And like, okay, but it's also just going to murder them. So why do we need the, like, if it's going to play mind games, like that's interesting, but no. And it was so scattershot that like the fact that the top floor of their house just has a whole racetrack built in it. Yeah. So they can chase her around the fucking corners like Benny Hill. Yeah. Like, I understand a knee wall, but I've never seen one that goes all on like all four sides of the house.
I'd forgotten about the thing with the, Josh, you're glad you mentioned that, because that was the thing I forgot about, was the thing like, oh, the home is the best place for her, and like, oh, mom's a nurse, whatever else. It came in, you've not seen it, I don't think, but I don't, Matt and I have seen it, the the completely bunkshit insane movie Roar. And like, and like how the whole thing at the beginning of Roar, I mean, it's been a while since I've watched it, but like, it's that thing where they're talking about, like, he's like, you know, like, oh, I have some experience and for with naturalist things and working in this thing everywhere else. And it's like, sure, buddy, but like, yeah, not with a bunch of fucking lions in the wild. And like, that's not the environment we're talking about. Like, it's like, well, I've handled rabbits before, so I think I should be able to handle open heart surgery. Like, it's just like, that's a leap.
Well, to be fair, Roar has someone essentially say, I have a subscription to Natural Geographic, and so I have 60 lions living in my house.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it's that leap. It's just like, holy shit.
Like, holy
fuck. That's a 10-minute marker of Roar where you just go, uh-oh.
Watching people actively bandage themselves while a take is happening because something just scratched the shit out of them is a wild way to watch a movie.
Yeah, it's just like, that's. I mean, I think I must have told you this, Matt, where I was, when they found that movie and they kind of resurrected it and they restored it, I went to the screening of that here because it was Vinegar Syndrome or whoever put it out.
I would want to watch that on a big screen. I think that.
But it was like, but at that point, it was like this. It was this rumor, you know. It was like, right, it's like when I they heard found about that, it
for years before I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because it was just this like, you know, thing, and it's like, and I was in the theater, the old Ritz downtown, and it was like they found this thing and they restored it. They're gonna release it. And this whole thing, like, holy shit! And it was like going, and then it'd be like about that 10-minute marker going like, this isn't good. Like, this is, I'm going to feel real uncomfortable for a long fucking time. And it's like, so bringing back to this movie, that it was sort of like when the guy says like, oh, home is the best place for, and then mom is like all like blindly, and then dad's like, are we sure about that? are we positive about that? You know, it's like, and so it's like, and so that was one of those deals, like that part of it. And then the stuff with the cop lady, like, yeah, I can forgive a lot of other whatever, and I can forgive the mummy movie I'm never going to get. But like that stuff, I just sort of like if you want to tie me down to the ground in terms of reality components to it, like that's a silly business.
Silly. Also, we add though that when mom is like home, she must stay at home, and she is at that point injured grandma. She's got like a strip of skin missing from her leg, and dad is like, that doesn't seem like the best idea. And they had a fight about it. And I was like, oh my God, are they going to have a fight about it? Like, really? She's so dead set on keeping daughter in the home. They're going to, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. And, you know, and then we get to the end where it's like, we have this videotape of this ritual so we can just do it now.
Yeah.
On anybody we want at any time. Because it's definitely not an involved like process that involves a bunch of engraving on skin and shit. Like, but we're not really clear what the process is. I don't know. Like it. So for me, like this starts pretty interesting in the very beginning before daughter gets kidnapped. It gets really dull and slow and muddled in the middle. And I just wanted Buffy to come in and kick somebody's ass and finish it. And then it gets like kind of silly deadite kind of thing for a little bit. And then it gets really stupid and then it's over. It's like, there are so few parts of this that I like. So for me, this is like a 4.5 out of 10. Like I have no idea how this got made, honestly. And I want my Universal Monster movie universe that is Catherine Newton centric. Because she's already been in a movie with Dracula.
You're right.
And, you know, we just need to, and a movie with Frankenstein. We just need to put her in a movie with Wolfman and the Mummy, and we're good.
And then we can have our Monster Squad remake. It'll be awesome.
Well, and also that of course, then you think of one of the greatest moments with any mummy in any movie, whatever else, is when the kid's like, there's a monster in the closet. And then dad's on the other side of the door going, there's no monsters here. See, look. And then his life goes on and he goes, see?
I thought you were going to say, the door. I thought you were going to say when the mummy says, bogus.
That's also good.
Like, or is that Frankenstein?
That's Frankenstein says bogus. Yeah, you're
right. That shot is just one of the that's the all time best.
So good.
It's just like, oh, it's just glorious. Just glorious. Sorry, Matt, go ahead.
No, it's all good. I still love this. I think this is great. I like I said, I've never seen a movie that has just a shambling zombie that is scary. So I guess I was excited to see how they'd pull that off. And I was like, oh, I guess they can't pull that off either. But they're giving me something that is exactly like one of my favorite franchises, you know, Evil Dead. And so, great. I enjoy an Evil Dead movie. In fact, this guy's made one I enjoyed. And so I was just along for the ride. Like, there's a bunch of really squicky, interesting, gross ways of doing horrible things to bodies. And that's kind of what I like in a movie sometimes. Like, this is one that I think would be tough to watch while eating.
Yeah.
So like the monstery bits are awesome. I think, yeah, like Little Creepy Girl is really not a genre that works for me anymore. But as part of a larger, more bonkers thing, like, fine. So yeah, like, probably not a great mummy movie, but I had a great time. So this is like a 9 out of 10 for me. I love this.
Well, I'm glad for you. That's a good thing. Yeah, I didn't. Unfortunately, that was not the, you know, it's like, and part of it is my own fault, because like I said, I have this image in my head of this mummy movie that I will never get. And I want that movie so bad. And so, but it's like, we're not going to get that one. So that wasn't it. And then it was just sort of like The Child in Peril, but then changing into this kind of impish sort of otherworldly creatures. So I'm like, it's not really that interesting. But it's just, you know, I don't know, it's just kind of like, my biggest takeaway, like, you know, as time has gone on, you know, as, you know, days pass and whatever, and you get a little calmer, it's just sort of like, I kept thinking, like, this is like, I think this is the epitome of like a brainstorming movie where you had people working on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they're bad people. I don't think that they're shitty people or anything like that. I think it's just one of those things that it just really strikes me as like, and I don't know, I mean, maybe Lee Cronin was just by himself with a typewriter. The hell if I know. But it's just one of those things that strikes me as being like one of those brainstorming movies where you're like, I want to brainstorm a thing. Like, okay, we're going to write down some different ideas or whatever else. And it's just like, ah, that's not really working. Well, we can connect this to this. And it's like somebody's really trying, but it's just all the stuff, just, you know, the connectiveness to it, it's just sort of not happening. And so it's sort of like, so the combination of that and then just a combination of, just like I said, I'm just never going to get the damn movie that I want. It's sort of like, and that's not this movie's fault, but maybe a little bit. So I don't know. You know, it's one of those things that it had a few things going for it. So, I mean, I don't like to do this necessarily, but I would say, I'll say like 3.5 out of 10. 3.5 out of 10. The Egypt's third most popular candy bar.
What was it? Tuts Gold or something?
Yeah, it was like, when they showed that wrapper, I was just like,
Puffets,
oh.
Or, yeah.
Like, Tut Crunch, excellent. Or Crunchy Tut.
That was, oh, that was the funny.
How did
that,
you
that,
get that, so crunchy? Crunchy Tut.
That reminded me of
Real Mummy.
That reminded me of the, so when I was watching, this last weekend, they had the Warped Tour going on from Long Beach. And then also there's this big festival in Japan called the Fuji Rock Festival. They streamed that one too, but because it's in Japan, the times are all screwy. So, some of the stuff I was able to catch, some stuff I was not able to catch, and kind of a cool, it was fun to watch. But what was crazy was, because of the feed through Amazon, was basically like through Amazon Japan being funneled into Amazon America. So like in the interstitial parts, there'd be commercials, but they were like Japanese commercials. Oh. And so there was these great commercials for some vending machine thing and somewhere else.
Hell yeah.
And there's this one, there's like a bunch of people swimming and they're all doing all this kind of stuff. And it's for this drink called Pocari Sweat. And I was like, what the fuck is that? And then Kristen perked up from her computer. She's like, oh, yeah, I used to drink that all the time when I lived in Japan. I was like, what the fuck? And she's like, yeah, it's great. I'm like, okay. She's like, yeah, it's like a citrusy kind of like soda-y kind of thing. And so now I'm on a mission to track some down for her because I want to surprise her with it. But it was just sort of like, I was like, you know, this bonky-ass name, Pocari Sweat. And then she's like, no, that's really good stuff. And I'm like, okay, cool. So when, in this movie with the candy bars, I was looking at that rapper. I was like, what's happening with this? Like, is that a real thing? Because maybe it is. Hell if I know. But anyway, it was just sort of like, I was kind of tickled by that a little bit. But
amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more audible yawning that I'm trying to suppress. One moment. Right, so next we're going to talk about Forbidden Fruit, or La Fruta Prohibida, as you might say. Before I begin, I would like to start with an apology, because this was being talked about as the new Diablo Cody movie.
We're like, oh, yeah, I was wondering about that too.
From Diablo Cody. And it's like, oh, okay, that's great. And then when I saw it started, and it was like, from the producer of Jennifer's Body, Diablo Cody. Like, Diablo Cody also wrote Jennifer's Body, sir. It's like, oh, Diablo Cody didn't have shit to do with this movie.
Yeah.
You just want me to think of her while I'm watching it, which is worse because these people cannot, right? Like she does, whether you love or hate it.
This is what we've had to learn to do with seeing Sam Raimi attached to things and Jordan Peele. Yeah. It's like, it's almost always producer. And mm-hmm. So it's like, no, apparently we have to look out for that for Diablo Cody movies now too.
Yeah, and that means...
Well, it probably opened a few doors and that's probably about the size of it. Yeah.
Which is great, yeah. And, you know, good for giving people a shot. But, yeah. This was my, took me 3 days to finish.
It's funny because I think, like, watching it, I was like, okay, Matt is going to, and Charlie, both are probably going to hate the first two-thirds of this. And I can tolerate that, like, yes, bitch dialogue a little bit better. But then the end of it, I was like, this is so pointless and stupid. At least it's gory.
Yeah, that was the one thing.
It doesn't have anything to do with anything that came before it. So this really wants to be Mean Girls meets The Craft.
Either of which would be a better use of your time.
Yeah, and it starts with this premise that there is a store at the mall that's super fancy based on the Free People store, I guess. And the girls that work there are like the plastics in the mall. And they bully people like you would in high school and like have a clique like you would in high school. And that doesn't make any goddamn sense, but you know,
actually I work in a mall.
We move on.
And we just installed a luxury wing. And so, you know, half of my customers at my little pizza place come from the normal mall. And then half of them come from Louis Vuitton and Watches of Switzerland and places I can't even pronounce. And boy, it is very much like the people in this movie. So this to me felt like going to work.
Do the people that work at Louis Vuitton though have like a Wednesdays we wear pink kind of shit going on?
Well, some of them have matching things that look like Pan Am flight attendant outfits from the 60s. Some of them just get to wear incredibly insane fashion, like those weird shorts like the one gal's wearing, where you're like, why are you wearing strange poofy shorts and then like a halter top? Like, what the fuck
is
this?
Yeah, why do you have a diaper on? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a gal at my mall that is in one of those super high-end shops that wears like leather shorts like that and then like a halter top and then a men's suit jacket. And, you know, a necklace that costs more than any vehicle I've ever owned.
You're dressed like, for no weather. Zero weather.
Like, I don't know. Is that dressed? Like, if your kid comes out of your closet dressed like that, you're like, oh, cute. You put on a bunch of mommy and daddy's clothes. And then you go, now get dressed. We got to go to church. No one dresses like that. You have to have a fuck you level of money to look that stupid. And so, like, yeah, I absolutely daily work with these people who will come to me for food and still sneer at me while I'm making it and giving to them. And I'm like, God damn it, you guys. So yeah, these are people that I literally work with every day and hate. Some are awesome, obviously, but there are definitely people that are very much like this that I deal with daily.
But they are, to me, they were so one-to-one to Mean Girls. Like, Lily Reinhart was just absolutely Regina George. You haven't seen Mean Girls? You ain't right, boy. Like, Lily Reinhart was just Regina George, and then Victoria Pedretti from Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor, who's fantastic and everything, but she's the, you know, Amanda Seyfried character. She's the dumb one. And then Alexander Shipp is the kind of secretly smart Lacey Chabert kind of person. Like, it just took the three main characters of that movie and just transplanted them into this one. And that didn't feel super fresh. And then they have the newbie that they're kind of flirting with and making her, like, hazing her a little bit. And then they have like these little happenings where they do magic, and maybe the magic's real and maybe it's not,
and there's a bit of a mystery, I guess, which is, you know, the moment they give the first inkling and go, oh, that gal has killed her dad.
Okay. And she like lives in her car, like we find that out, and then it's
Are we supposed to not understand what is happening?
Yeah.
Because they treat it as a reveal at some point. I'm like, if this is your first movie, and I mean, like, if you're 4 years old and this is your first movie, this might blow your mind. But if you've seen a movie, like, say, The Craft, this is the same movie. The one gal who is way too into it and way too drunk with power takes advantage of other people who just want to belong somewhere. And then, oh no, horrible things happen to them because of it. And the one person who is true of heart comes out the best at the end.
Well, and she does get murdered, though.
She does, but you know what I mean. Like, there's like the good one, and like the thing is this didn't piss me off. This was just a complete flatline. Mm. Like, I'm not, it is the worst sin a movie can do. I was just nothing. I was bored. I wasn't even like annoyed or mad. It was just like, I'm just waiting to feel something. And then when the escalator starts chewing up the one girl, I'm like, ah, there it is. Okay. I feel that. That's cool. Right. And then, but then they go right back to just way over explaining their overwrought conflict and dialogue as they slowly fight in a fountain in a pool or a fountain. Oh,
and
a
then the totally worthless button on it with Gabrielle Union.
That pissed me off. That part pissed me off.
For no reason at all.
Yeah. That was baffling because she was her big line, her big line is, you know, like, oh, I've been following, I've been tracking this girl for a while. Like, really?
Because and you prevented nun murders?
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, like, there could be 100 cameras in that store and you would have seen all the rest of this kind of stuff. That doesn't make any goddamn sense.
But she also made herself the manager of the store. She can walk around freely there. Like, and yet she's always shown off camera. You see like a foot or something and you hear a voice as though it's gonna be this big reveal. And when they do show her in the post credits, it's like, oh, that's a person we've never met before, and she's telling us a bunch of shit we never were introduced to in the course of the film. This is just shitty writing.
It's just a cameo from someone from another teen movie.
Well, that was the thing that got me. That was the thing. And I've been thinking about how to say this in a way that's not going to come across as like a men's rights activist person. But like the writing in this is so crummy, mainly because there are plenty of people who have a good point that when they talk about the way that female characters are portrayed in a lot of stuff in media, they're done pretty poorly. And it's a lot of times it's very kind of shitty and then needs to be moved forward. And they've absolutely got a point. I actually absolutely agree. But like the answer is not having every male character be the worst fucking thing that's ever existed and have all of this interactions just be predatory, like you're on the savannah and you're looking out for predatory animals. Like it's so boring. Like it's not like it's so like even the boyfriend guy of Fig or whatever else, like he's fine, but like would you have even noticed if he ever showed up at all? Like it wouldn't have mattered. So like it doesn't, at a certain point, like, yeah, I don't want to be that stupid reductive wise ass thing of being like, if you switch the genders in this, there will be people picketing because of this just a stupid, like bland, flat ass way that this was written. Yeah. Like, oh, they're making a point. Oh, it's a female empowerment. Fuck that noise. Write better. Like, I'm on board with the message, not the way you're doing it.
And also, like, is it the female empowerment? And then is it kind of undermining that shallow idea of what female empowerment might be? And then does it forget to resolve that and just jump to a bunch of gory death scenes instead? Like, it is the weirdest fucking thing, because you also have the girl that they kicked out of the crew who, like, I guess she killed her boyfriend, like boss mean girl killed the girl's boyfriend and made them think it was the magic, but really it was poison, question?
I think. Perhaps? Yeah.
I guess. Who gives a fuck? And she's kicking around, and then for no particular reason, and then she offs herself, and I don't know, there's a couple of scenes of them doing their little spells that, I don't know, to me it would be far more interesting if there was something magic, because if you're going to thoroughly rip off Mean Girls and The Craft, just rip the rest of The Craft off, because that would have been good.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to have, like, two witches doing battle at the end of the thing in a mall.
Yeah, Boss Girl is no Fairuza Balk.
I think that's kind of the thing, like, when you think about something like The Craft, and like, and everything's got its ups and downs or whatever, but, like, there's legitimate, like, tension in parts of that movie, and there's a, I wouldn't, like, suspense is not the right word, but there's a good pacing. There's a good build up. There's like a, you know, there's a lot of meat to it, because partly because in The Craft, you have other fucking characters outside of this stupid bubble. And it's sort of like, and it ultimately, like, I think that's what this movie could have used, is just normal people. like interacting tangentially from this thing or something, you know, like a delivery person or something, just any other normal fucking person that could have, because the first person that we get introduced to at the very beginning of this thing is jerking off on the truck guy. And it was sort of like, that's it. And like,
when I was trying to figure out what that was supposed to mean. Cause like guy waiting, I guess some guy is so eager to go to the mall. He's there before it opens and he just sits there. A girl pulls up next to him who's cute. And she makes a little like wank wank hand gesture. And he's like, yeah, I should start masturbating right now in the middle of the day in front of a woman I just met. And then she throws hot coffee on his dick. And like throwing hot coffee on a guy who's jerking off's dick is funny if that guy is, say, in the adjacent changing room and he's spying on girls and you realize this and then you pour it over the top of the thing and it's like, fuck that guy. Great. But it's like, that's just in what world? You know what I mean? And I realize we're talking about horror movies and none of this makes fucking sense, but like, it was so weird to have that not be a character that she knew or that mattered or ever came back. And there were no consequences. And like, it's like, why then? I guess it's supposed to show us that she's mean or doesn't take shit from men. And it's like, great, but that it's just so stupid. It doesn't accomplish anything. Yeah. At least not for me. Like,
intended to be a fuck yeah moment, like girls rule kind of thing. Like, I feel like that dude, like his behavior doesn't make any sense, but then hers doesn't either. And yeah.
Well, and it's just like when she says the thing about like, oh, I'm not gonna let him come, whatever. Like, it's like, what? Like, I don't know. It's just one of those things. Like right from the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh boy, like this is we're into the well, actually kind of approach to social commentary. And I was just sort of like, and what's a bummer is that like, you know, the first 9 hours are painful and endless.
Yeah.
Then there's about 30 minutes of a really cool movie.
pretend different things led up to it, so you cared about these characters, and then you pretended the ending didn't happen, then that 30 minutes is a pretty cool slice.
That's the thing, yeah. Like it's right there. There's a little chunk of it, and then it's like, and then it just shower farts its way to the end, and it's just sort of like, and it just gets me because it's just like, you know, just like when I was talking about the mummy, like with you know, modern witchcraft kind of stories, whatever. Like I really want somebody to make a really badass witch movie.
I think there's plenty of room in the genre for some awesome witch movies, you know,
just like some really legitimately, because I think there's a lot of stuff you can do that you can be really scary with, and there's some things you can do that are really interesting and can really push it. But this just sort of like, I don't want to fall on the laurels of like, oh, maybe it just wasn't made for me. Maybe it wasn't the target audience. I thought that initially. I'm like, well, maybe I'm just not the target audience. I should give it, cut it some slack. And I thought, well, no, because I don't accept that. Because it's sort of like, I'm not going to treat somebody any differently. You know, the same way like with children's entertainment. Like, there's plenty of kids' entertainment. Some of it is absolute dog shit. and that's not my fault.
I've been trying to like pick out anything from this. See if this is me just trying to make sense of it so I didn't feel like I wasted my time or if this adds up at all. In looking at this thing like in toto, the best I can come up with of a sort of like, not even a lesson that is to be learned or was learned, but it's simply like giving us a view of hurt people, right? And like, yes. Okay, great. But like, you know, read King Sorrow if you want a really good version of that. But like, okay, yes, that is something. We're watching, you know, the backstory we get from our boss girl versus, you know, the other people in the group and the way she's acting. It's like, yes, you know, horrible things have happened to you. You assume the world is horrible. So you do horrible things preemptively, accidentally making yourself one of the horrible people. Yep, that's a story. That's a valid story. It can be done well. But I think it took me days to pull those strings out of this, and I still can't tell if that's wishful thinking.
Yeah, it also would help if it were grounded in any recognizable human behavior to me. Like, we don't really understand what the stakes are with these girls because none of it is recognizable as what the human do. So what is going to happen?
I'm glad you said that, Joshua, because that was the thing with the... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just like, what's going to happen to you if she catches you fucking the guy from the like pretzel barn?
I guess she'll push you off the thing?
Like, is she going to... Is it you're worried about being ostracized or you're worried about being harmed? or worried about them using the magic against you, and is the magic real? Like, none of those questions are really answered, so we don't know why they're so terrified of her. Because yeah, they're couldn't figure out
why
adults,
people would put up with that,
like,
shit.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing that got me, was like in the first third, Fig, you know, Emily, Alexander Shipp's character, like she is speaking in the same way and treating people the same way, that they're all there kind of this that thing that's happening. But later on, she goes like, I'm not doing any of this crap or whatever else, and this whatever else, I'm just doing this because I'm going to graduate school and blah 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 blah. And it's sort of like,
so you spend 12 hours a day acting like an idiot?
That's the thing. Yeah, I was like, go back to how you wrote that scene before, those scenes with her before, and show me where you show that character knows that this is all nonsense and she's just kind of playing along, because it's not there. Like, it's not there. And the same thing with the Cherry character. It's like, that actress is a good actress. So I've seen her in other stuff. She's all good. But it's like, Jesus Christ, the kind of like the fizzy brained sexpot character who just couldn't figure out how a shoe worked, you know, in the first two thirds of the thing, all of a sudden becomes like the wounded, you know, the wounded samurai character who's like got the reflections on life in the last third of that. Like, show me in the first two thirds of this where she's actually really on top of it. It's just so.
Well, in the first two thirds, she's Willy from Temple of Doom.
Yeah, then if these characters are acting unlike themselves, they introduce some idea that Apple is controlling people either through actual magic or some kind of, yeah, some real legitimate, like just real heavy handed threat or something, but show that, because if you don't show that or there's not some mechanism there, then all I have to go on is the idea that like, there's no through line whatsoever, and the writing and the presentation plan was, it's just vignettes that have that kind of like a three drink minimum Friday night at the comedy club late show guys and fellas level of thinking, and I don't have time for that. Just like from anybody, guys, girls, anybody, it doesn't really matter. Like I don't have the patience for it, and that was the way that I walked away from this, was just kind of feeling like. It just, I don't know. It just was like, it's like, God, there's a great opportunity to tell a really, really, really cool witch story. And it's just as a bummer that it just becomes this, like, this thing that I just was very frustrated by.
Yeah. One of those where you end up going, okay, but if that's what where we were going to end, then why did we need all this shit over here? And what was that about? And yeah. How about this thing? And why haven't we, there's a whole subplot about the doll having a camera in it
that only has a blinking red light in the penultimate scene, right, where it's necessary.
The girls have to confess their sins to it and address it as Marilyn Monroe, and yeah
see, I assumed that the boss girl was going to have a camera behind the mirror and would be blackmailing the girls with their confessions. That made sense,
yeah, like Scientology style, sure,
yeah. And it's like, great, I thought of that while watching the movie. And I can only assume that tacked on scene at the end to explain the boss was because someone went, wait, what was the whole deal with the boss? They went, fuck. They went out for 3 hours and shot the last scene, you know? Like,
he's available, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's another mechanism, which, I mean, whatever. It just is what it is. But the Marilyn thing, I just, like, I've gotten to the point in my life now where, I mean, I have nothing against Marilyn Monroe. I think she was a pretty sharp, a lot sharper of a lady and a lot more interesting of a lady than she's ever been given allowed for, but she's not that interesting.
No.
And I just,
and
like,
also, at this day and age, if you're that over the moon on Marilyn Monroe, I'm kind of over you.
Like, that's kind of, yeah. I mean, I don't want to be a jackass about it, but I just, like, it's one,
I mean,
of those
just
things
the same way if someone's like into James Dean right now, I'm like, yeah, you could like James Dean movies, but fucking get over yourself, man. This guy's been dead since your grandparents weren't even born yet. Like, fuck off.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, if you're a guy of a certain age, at some point, pardon me, at some point you would have, you know, fallen into the kind of the modern beat writers, you know, the, what's his ass?
Chuck Palahniuk, or?
You know, well, yeah, that's one of them. And the other one I'm forgetting.
Charles Bukowski.
Bukowski, that's the one.
Yeah.
Where, like, yeah. Bukowski is like, is to me, is like the epitome of like.
Oh, I was going Henry Miller. Yeah.
Well, there's a few books of Henry Miller's I like, but like there's, you know, there, a lot of it's a little bit flirt on.
A little bit up its own ass.
But Bukowski is a perfect example. Like, if you're past the age of 25 and you're still just way embroiled in the mythos of Bukowski. It's like he was an abusive drunk who wasn't as smart as he thought he was. Like, and he was a subpar writer at best. Like, give me a fucking break. Like, grow up a little bit. Like, and I don't want to be that guy because I'm looking at toys on my shelf. Like, I don't want to be that guy that, like, oh, I grew up. But like, at a certain point, you get beyond these fakey archetypes. And so with this thing having this mechanism of the Marilyn Monroe thing, I'm like, my eyes cannot roll further back in my fucking head.
For people who are 20 years old.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, come on now.
Could it have been Madonna?
Yeah, that would have made perfect sense. That would be just Cher in the past enough.
Or something like Celine Dion. Who,
plus, with Madonna, you at least get the double entendre. Like, fuck, man.
Okay, yeah. So we're already smarter than this movie. Like, I wish, I dearly wish that Diablo Cody had written this, because we would have been a lot sharper, and she knows how to tell a fucking story. And like, I've liked pretty much everything she's done. Matt's liked at least one thing she's done.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to see. So for me, this is like a 4 out of 10. I just do not understand why it exists. It's such talented people got roped into being in it.
As much as we're like getting heated and making jokes about it now, like I said, my real reaction to this was like turning it on and watching it. And after about 15 minutes being like, oh shit, I got to rewind. Cause I had just, my eyes had literally, I wasn't even looking at a computer or my phone. I was just looking around the room. I was like reading the titles of books on the bookshelf and going, I wonder if Carr's got something over there I want to read. And they're like, fuck. Okay. And I rewound a little bit and I watched a little more. And then I was like, all right, I got to take a piss. So I paused it and I'm like, I am 25 minutes in and it has been 2 hours. So I was like, fuck it, I'll try again tomorrow. And I think whenever we were texting, I said, I looked and I had an hour left. That was after 3 attempts to watch this movie. It's an hour and 45 minutes long.
Yeah.
Jesus. So like, I wasn't mad. I just literally could not keep focused on it. And so this is a 1.5 for me. It's just, I actually like plain toast. So this is just a plate.
A plate. That's terrific. I like,
it wasn't,
I like
that celluloid.
That's just a plate. I love that. Oh man. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to yell and scream and tee off on people. I mean, like, it's one of those things that just sort of ultimately, this was people that wrote this. It was an adaptation of a play from what I read on the thing, and it was like, and so there's a, you get real close to the material, I guess, you know, and so you get really, you know, tunnel in there. But ultimately, it's just sort of like, you know, you take that 30 minutes that really, really clip along and are great. And if the whole movie has that feel, then you really clip along at something really good. And not everything has to be for everybody. But at a certain point, like, you can't show that much promise in one part of a movie and just completely fall flat on just every other aspect of everything. And I kept thinking, like, this is such a weird one to think of, but I kept thinking of that movie Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal about the stringer photographer. And like, I remember seeing I was at the premiere for that one years and years, years ago. And it was like, and being in the theater watching that movie and whatever else, and just like certain scenes of that movie where I can like feel it on my skin and you can feel what it, you know, there's just something that's happening, like, texturally with the way that looks and like how despicable and lousy he is. And but part of it is like the manipulation and these things that are happening, and they're all these very true, you know, real life things that are kind of working this web, and then in a more spectacular, you know, bigger, grandiose way, like Talented Mr. Ripley or something. But like, just like, you could do that with this story. You can make Apple that kind of a character, because it doesn't have to be a male character. It could be a female character, absolutely. But like, just don't give me this half-assed, you know, Riot Girl kind of nonsense, like just this Hot Topic clearance sale bullshit. Like, I just don't have the time for it. So there's a few things in there that I like, but otherwise I just was very frustrated. So I'm going to say 2. I'm going to say 2 out of 10. 2 out of 10. The little tiny cupcakes when they're in those little cardboard things, because you can never get them out without getting icing on your fingers. And then
that's true.
Off your fingers, then things get all sticky and it's annoying. Out of 10.
That little bit I was actually kind of into. The whole thing cupcakes? with the stupid little cupcakes. Yeah.
Where she's that, like, admire my cupcakes.
That rang very true. Yeah, if they just done more things about stupid shit that you find in a mall, So Diablo Cody and Kevin Smith should have written this together. The dialogue would have been insufferable, but it would have been
really fun. Bad.
So let's talk about Scarecrow. Y'all ready for this? El Espantapájaros.
Do you want to take a stab at the original title?
The Bird Scarer. Well, it says Kleinem Summer, so Verano de Kleinem.
Oh, which makes more sense.
By the way, when you type, I typed Scarecrow into Google Translate because I've never encountered that word before, and I didn't know if it was just Scarecrow, but apparently it's Scarebirds. But it did an autocomplete, like Scarecrow, Espantapájaros, Scarecrows, Espantapájaros. And the third entry was Scarecrow Get an Award. And El Espantapájaros Recibe un Premio was one of the options that people search for. Like, hey, man, how do you say Scarecrow Get an Award in Spanish?
Yeah. Or what amazing subculture we need to learn more about.
But not Scarecrow Gets an Award either. Scarecrow Get an Award.
So it's like encouraging? Like, hey, Scarecrow, get an award, buddy. I believe in you.
I don't know. Or like a kid, or, you know, like someone whose English is not the first language. You know, Scarecrow, get an award.
Yeah, sometimes. Like the first time you go to the state fair and they have the Scarecrow judging.
In old country, Scarecrow get an award if he Scarecrow sufficiently. This movie has nothing to do with the Scarecrow of any kind. It is, in fact, if Stephen King was from New Zealand.
Yeah, and that is the thing. Like, you're like, what? I don't know if you guys had this experience of like turning this on. For one thing, they did a hell of a job in restoration for starters. Like,
it looks really nice.
There's a lot of stuff from that era, from like the mid 70s to mid 80s, and from New Zealand and Australia, are just in. I mean, think about the old
a lot version of shit still shot on like 16.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like, blown up.
The old version of Patrick. Like, you know, we always joke about with Patrick and like Phantasm, where you're like, you see the restoration, you're like, oh, there's shit there. I don't even know. Think they were there.
Pops.
So like you walk into this thing, and initially you're like, boy, this does look, they did a good job with this whole thing. And then you are met with just this, like, yeah, the kind of Stand By Me thing with the narration and the things that happened that summer kind of business. And a soundtrack that I am convinced the people that were making this movie like contracted with the musicians to make the soundtrack, and the musicians were like, cool. And then they were walking down the street, and then the other musicians were walking the other direction, were going to work on another movie, and they all bumped into each other. And they went, oh, and they gathered up all their papers and off they went. And so the guy they did the music for this movie was not the music for this movie, as a music for another movie, because as Josh had pointed out, like, it just does whatever the fuck it wants.
Yeah, sure does.
I think it,
which was charming being warned about that going in. I actually enjoyed it.
I think it was just like, okay, I want you to do the score for my movie. Cool. When can we watch the movie? Like, no, you don't need to watch the movie. Just, I need.
What's it called? Scarecrows. So yeah, it's a kid's movie?
What I need is a like kind of upbeat, peppy thing for when people are doing stuff. I need kind of a ominous thing. And I need something that sounds like a saxophone is trying to fuck you.
There are
and not in the hot way, like in The Lost Boys.
No, well, like, just like
this, where the sex does that, Josh, and you're like, okay, well, clearly there's going to be some kind of a sex scene happening. Like, no, it's just somebody walking in a general store.
Yeah, this is not the saxophone like to Red Shoe Diaries. This is like a saxophone standing outside your window masturbating. Yeah. This is the horniest fucking saxophone I've ever heard. I have it twice in my notes. The fuckingest saxophone imaginable. There is a moment in this movie where Prue, our like young lady who is, you know, becoming a woman, just like our narrator, who is a hobbit, goes, you know, then one day Prue hit puberty, and she's just like, wakes up, she's like, I got tits, fuck all of you, I'm going to go sponge bath an old guy. It's kind of beautiful. So there is a story here of like John Carradine is the drifter who comes into town, and he's like a murderous drifter who's kind of killing his way through some people in this small town. But really there's so much more of just the small town life, and like their whole running away from the rival gang of kids who want to steal their chickens. And like, there's this whole cast of characters. Like, there's the funeral director who has the best line when he's introduced. People are just dying to meet old Charlie. Like, yeah. Oh my God. I think you should probably do that every time you're introduced to someone.
That is absolutely something that needs to happen. Yeah.
And you occasionally get a line like, my brother wouldn't stoop to stealing fowls. And he goes, I stoop anyway. I've got a rupture. And he's just like Ringo Starr for a second. And then, and yet, like, this is so much fun to watch. I had so much fun with this movie.
It's a baffling movie. Yeah, it's such a weird experience because, like, I don't know, I want to be culturally sensitive here, but, like, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, watching sometimes things from Australia and New Zealand. Do you ever, like, wonder watching some of these things especially from this era, from, like, 74 to, like, 85, where you're, like, they speak as though they're British high society, but they act as though they are feral dogs. Like, have you this feeling watching anything from this region of the world, from this range? Because, like, the way that this little pack of kids...
watch Wake and Fright, yeah.
Yeah. Like, everybody are just these, like, feral, foaming beasts, and you're like, but they speak in this very proper sort of way, but, like, what in the fuck?
Yeah, it's been a minute since I've watched a movie where a young woman, such as our lead here, has some guy get all rapey and sexually assaulted at her, and when she shoves him away, an older woman yells at her. And I was like, wow, it's been a minute since I've seen a movie that shows us this side of just, yep, anyone around is going to get handsy. Like, well,
it was so interesting, too, because, like, as the story goes along and you're getting the dynamic between the two fellas and then Prue and then the other young lady, what was the name? I've forgotten now. And they're like, and he says the thing, like, oh, we kind of became all sort of like kind of thick as thieves, kind of friends, whatever else. And they're like, there's a swimming scene and there's them doing this, that, whatever else. And like, really, and maybe I'm just being too Pollyannish about it, but it has a real kind of innocence to that component of it. And it's like, it's very sincere, kind of sweet kind of component to it. And then you get back to everybody's fucking John Steinbeckian sort of house. And then everything's grimy and the worst. And, you know, the grandpa's drunk in the living room and they're waiting for his eggs. And I'm like, what in the fuck is happening with this? And you go into town and then everybody's nuts. And it's just like, this juxtaposition is wild.
I think it's that the super colorful cast of characters and the murderous children that make me think Stephen King.
Yeah. And then
you have that, like, that halcyon days of my youth, remembering back kind of thing. There's like a little Wonder Years to it too.
Yeah.
Although it's the Winder Years because we're
the Windy Years.
I mean, I cannot.
I'm Johnny Australia.
I just cannot do the Kiwi accent because like almost every vowel is "ih" somehow. And then you have like the little upspeak. Like, yeah. His friend's name is Les, as in Lester. And most of the time it's Liz. What are you doing, Liz? Yeah. Liz. Are they stealing fowls? I guess they are. They are stealing your fowls, sir.
Such a strange...
Like, there's tons of shit that happens. Like a house burns down and a bunch of people get mutilated. There's like the guy who likes to look through the window at the piano teacher because he's a little touched in the head, but the music suits him. And then he apparently likes to take off all his clothes and hang out outside the piano teacher's house before he gets murdered, and that's really never remarked upon.
Yeah, it's like, it's sort of like what he does. Like, oh, fair enough.
I think I'm the only one that's watched all of the Howling movies, right?
I think I've seen most of them, but I think there's a couple of them I've not seen.
Okay, there's seven or eight, right? I made an effort last year, the year before, to just any long horror series, I just sat and watched them all to just kind of like get it over with. And there's one of those where the entire movie takes place in a small southwestern American like ghost town, essentially. And it is apparently that is where they shot some of the, I don't remember the exact numbering here. So we'll say, you know, Howling 6, part of it is shot there. Right. And one of the guys who worked on that movie loved this like town of like literally like six buildings so much that he managed to get the rights to be able to shoot the next Howling movie in that same town. And it is just using all the people that actually live there, non-actors, being people in town who mostly just go about doing the things they actually do in that town. And then also every now and then they do like a camera with like a red, you know, wash on it to be like, oh, werewolves walking around. But there's like an entire scene in like the local like shit kicker bar where like the mayor, who is also the guy that owns the bar, whose daughter is also one of the people in the band, and they like sing. And there's a full musical number, but not like a Broadway thing, but like, oh, it's kind of like, yeah, there's two people in town, we'll get up and perform. And they do like a whole song, and you can tell the five locals that are also in that bar like know the words and they know the actions, but like it's like 5 to 10 minutes of just watching people go about their lives, and then like, oh, red camera lens, and then like, let's go make some silly jokes at the liquor store, and let's go talk to the old guy at his barn. And you're like, when is something gonna happen? And this movie gave me that vibe. And then by the end, some guy goes, oh no, a wolf. And they're like, rawr. And then you just see all these non-actors go, ah. And this kind of had that same thing of like, if you eliminate the tiny little bits of plot, this is just kind of like, this is what it's like to live in a small village in this place right now. And like, yeah. It is fascinating in that way, but it doesn't give you a lot to really hold on to as far as narrative goes. It's a mood thing. It's a vibe.
This made me look up the Howling series on Wikipedia and was surprised to learn there are 3 novels that the Howling movies are based on.
Yep. I saw those at Schindler's back in the 80s.
I haven't been that surprised since Slugs, the novel.
Well, and this one, The Scarecrow, like, I am very interested to track down this book. Because I saw a couple of citations that were saying like oh, the book is a lot darker and a lot more like you know, freaky and scary, and like, oh, interesting.
Because
like there are some shots of David Carradine in this where like, whoa, he's just very otherworldly looking, and it's like very like kind of a whole lot of presence and the intermixed with all this nonsense. The other thing too is I could pretty much guarantee you that we've seen other stuff with Tracy Mann in it, because like she's been in a bunch of stuff.
She looks so familiar, yeah.
She was in what's the fuck it, the Yahoo Serious one, and she was
Young Einstein.
Yeah,
no shit.
Not Young Einstein. The other one.
No, not Young Einstein.
Ned Kelly.
Yeah,
Red,
is that the one?
Red Buttons.
Reckless Kelly.
Reckless Kelly.
That's the one. And Hugo Weaving's in that one too.
No shit.
But yeah, she's been on a bunch of stuff over the years. It's like, and I thought about that a little bit watching this. I was like, boy, this the young lady playing that character, like, she's got a lot of presence to her. Like, she's really got like a something going on. Like, then I'd go look up the film thing. Like, oh yeah, she's had a big ass long career. Like, she's done a lot of stuff. I'm like, that's awesome. And so it's just like, I don't know. It's just this is such an interesting experience watching this movie.
A lot of this. Yeah, and a lot of it does work because John Carradine is such a presence.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, his hands at that point are kind of gnarled into fists from arthritis, but he's still just such a menacing figure.
Yeah, that almost is scarier. Yeah.
Then they give him a couple of moments when he's like trying to blend in with the townsfolk, and they're like, everyone's happy to meet old Charlie. And he does like a magic trick for them. And then they're just, so he's one of the guys and he gets to sit and drink with them.
Yeah.
And, but then he's the scariest dude. Oh, also in 1983, this was nominated for the New Zealand Music Awards for Film Soundtrack of the Year.
Oh, whoa. My God. Oh my Lord.
This is a rabbit hole that we could all lose our minds. We go too far here, guys.
Which soundtrack? I mean, there's nothing wrong with the music in this movie, except that it's in this movie.
Right. It's just the wrong movie.
It doesn't fit. It just does whatever the fuck it wants. This is one of those where I just like, I can't explain why something that is paced like this and weird like this and kind of slight like this just worked for me so very, very well. But it did. I had a blast with this.
Yeah, and it is such an interesting experience. Like, it's just one of, like, you know, we talked about, you know, Stand By Me and kind of like Stephen King thing, whatever. Because that's another thing that happens too, where like, because it's New Zealand and Australia both, like, they are absolute experts at being like, we're just going to throw stuff in there that you're not expecting.
Yeah.
And, you know, not like, so all of a sudden, like the sheep stand up and start singing or something like that, but it's sort of like, they're really good at just throwing stuff in there to keep you off kilter. And that was another thing that happened with this, was like, you get this slice of life and this remembrance thing and all this kind of whatever. But at any given point, I'm like, I don't know if it's going to be like a mind control thing, or like the kids will be away and they're going to come back to town and everybody's going to be goofy, or like, is it going to be like, maybe there's a, like another murderer or something. Like, at any point, I'm like, I don't know. It's just like, and the Australians and the Kiwis are like just are expert at this, like better than almost anybody else on Earth at just like throwing things in from just the side to side area. It's like, and so it just keeps you a little bit more engaged or kind of leaning forward just a little bit. It's like, because it shouldn't. This should be like, oh, this is what, nothing's happening, and it's like, but it doesn't do that. I just kept going like, well, now what's going to happen? Well, now what's going to happen? It's like, man. So I don't know. It was just, I don't know. This is an interesting experience. It's such an interesting deal.
Yeah, yeah, if you like the Lord of the Rings movies and you wish that they were just a little more rural New Zealand.
Yeah, like my final takeaway on this would just be like, for all the difficulty I had staying focused on Forbidden Fruit and just being bland as everything, like this one, I never quite knew what the fuck was going on, but I watched this start to finish enraptured.
Like, yeah.
You know, this is a movie. It may be somewhere closer to just, you know, peanut butter toast, nothing too fancy, but like, it's really good peanut butter toast. It's just kind of fascinating.
Damn Skippy.
Yeah, it's just...
I'm going to be back in a jiffy.
Oh, God.
Exactly. Smuckers. Look... I don't know how to score this thing. Like it's really well done in parts, and it's just banana kooky in parts. It's so like, let me give it like a 7.5 and a thumbs up. How about that?
There you go. I'll be a little more reserved. I think I'm just going to go 5. Cause like as a horror movie, not particularly horror-y, but just as like kind of a fascinating thing that I have like a warm feeling towards. Yeah. So like if someone said, should I watch it? I'd be like, yes. But if you're like, is it like a horror movie? I'd be like, ah, technically, you know.
Well, and like, and you know, I hate being the thing where sometimes you watch something older and you go like, boy, somebody could really make a remake of this. But like, you know, I don't know this book because I haven't read the book, but it's sort of like, if it is darker and kind of, you know, freaky or whatever else, it seems like you could really,
yeah, maybe
if you balance it the right way, you could really wring some more of the horror and the suspense out of that. But that'd be
odds it would have the charm, you know?
That's the thing, yeah. Like that's the balance of it. It's kinda like it's, you know, like even in fucking Dead Alive there's moments of charm to it. Like it's just these, yeah. Yeah, the Kiwis and the Australians are just like, so they've got this really great way of keeping the table just a little bit off balance, and it's quite impressive. It's just very unique to this, that area of the world. But yes, I don't know if an adaptation would fly. I don't really know, but
I bet, yeah, you get the rights cheap.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, something tells me this is probably not on the forefront of the whole bit. But yeah, no, it's just I'm glad you guys had a similar experience, because like I remember I got to the end of this and just going like, huh,
like, kind of, like, all right.
Just kind of got to the end and sort of like, well, I'm just like, what's the line from 'Twas the Night Before Christmas? Like, I can, you know, he chuckled in spite of himself. Like, I kind of got to the end of this and went, huh, I enjoyed that in spite of it. Like, was like, what an interesting thing. Oh, and also one of the best lines in cinema history, where the two fellas at the end are the kissing scene with the two girls, and they go, okay, bye, and off they go, and then he's like, well, what do you think it would be like to do the thing? And he's like, what do you think? Oh, you know what the thing is. And then the one guy goes, quote, according to Herbert, it's like bluebirds flying out your bum, unquote. And it's like, and I fucking love that. I think that's so great.
Amazing.
Yeah, also, I love that scene because they have the shittiest roller skates imaginable.
Yeah.
They're like metal axes and axles and metal wheels.
I remember kids having those when I was a kid.
Yeah. Like they're not so much skating as just like dragging their feet.
Yeah,
forward, and parents, you can just hear bought those because then you'd grinding.
Be tuckered out and go to bed.
It's like, would you like to stop on everything and fall down and bust up your knees? Like, yes, this is for you.
This will let you go like a breathtaking 1.5 miles an hour, as long as there's not a grain of sand in between you and your destination.
That was always my experience growing up, and skateboarding was sort of like you really learned at a certain point, like certain kind of trucks and bearings and stuff was like, boy, there's a difference.
Yeah.
But once you get to a certain point, like, you know, especially in Prescott and in Northern Arizona, where like everything's covered in gravel, and it's just sort of like you learn that, like, yeah, there's a difference between good quality and bad quality. And the difference is you fall down on your face a lot. That's the difference. So yeah, so I'm glad you guys had the same experience watching this, because I was kind of concerned watching through this, going like boy, this is not the whiz bang kind of a thing, but it's sort of like it's a different animal. So I'm glad you guys had a good experience, at least for being well, this is a weird little thing that we've just sort of fallen onto. I'm like, cool. So I'm gonna be up there. I'm gonna be up there with Josh. I'm gonna say 7.5. Like I was amazed at myself for being as engaged with the thing and like just. It's just, I don't know. I can't put a word to it exactly.
Yeah, so, it's like no one's going to put it on the movie poster, like gently baffled.
engagingly, bafflingly, its own entity. Like, sure, yeah. That doesn't tell me a goddamn thing. But it was such an interesting little interesting experience. And maybe at some point I'll try to track down that book and I'll be curious to see. Yeah, if there's some darker stuff in there, but anyway, as it stands, yeah, it's a fun little experience. So I'll say 7.5 out of 10, 7.5 out of 10. Did it just seem as though there was only about 6 chickens in the entire town? Like they
pretty much.
The chickens just keep changing hands. Sure. Like it was just sort of like at any given point, those chickens are just somewhere. It's just sort of like.
It was your day to watch them, waiting.
Yeah, and if those chickens, if you interviews those chickens, it'd be like, you know, Creature Comforts, the old Nick Park, you know, Aardman thing, where they're just talking to animals like they're doing interviews. I would love to hear like a chicken with a New Zealand accent, sort of, it'd be interviewed about this whole, like, well, I remember about that, Simma. Sort of like, we just lived in a bunch of houses. Out of 10.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm looking for the book now, and it's like, $17 on Amazon for a paperback, but I could get it on the Kindle.
I might pick it up too then, yeah.
Because it's... Okay, tell me if this sounds like the movie we watched. 14-year-old Nettie and his mate Les take swift revenge on the chicken-wrestling lynch gang, but things turn sinister when vulture-like Hubert Salter stalks into town. So far, so good. Right.
Yeah.
There's a sex killer on the loose, and Nettie is in fear for his sister's safety.
Oh,
pop culture meets gothic melodrama in this brilliant hallucinatory novel.
What?
All right, I'm getting that.
Yeah, it's hallucinatory like shit. All right.
Yeah, all right, I'll report back.
Okay, anyway, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back, and we'll tell you what's happening next.
Yes, sir.
So next week we're hitting up some new stuff and some overdue stuff. I feel like we're going to talk about Obsession. I'm super excited about that. My son watched that, by the way, with his buddy. And I was like, he said, we're going to watch Obsession. And I said, you know, you're 17, you know, you can absolutely watch that. I will guarantee it's like nothing you've seen yet, but he made it through it. He really liked it. And
good.
So good on him. We're going to watch Obsession. We're going to watch Evil Dead Boyne.
Boing.
And we are going to watch Cold Storage as well. And Evil Dead Burn is going to be video on demand. Cold Storage is MGM Plus. Obsession is somewhere.
Peacock.
Fucking shit.
Or available on whatever, I think.
See, that's what the good people at NBC really want to have as a reaction to their streaming service.
Well, if they don't want that, then they shouldn't make it so the no ad tier is $30 goddamn dollars a month. Like, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Assholes.
Fuck right off.
I refuse to pay for an ad tier service.
Yeah.
Because either I pay for it or I watch ads.
Yeah.
I don't pay you and then watch ads because no, fuck you. And Peacock is like, okay, $30 a month. Like, you can eat my entire ass. Like, yeah. I don't know who you think you are. So, Obsession, find it somewhere. Peacock,
it's out
maybe.
There.
Yeah. I've been Josh, also, I should point out this entire time, and I'll say bye.
We will have a short film next week, as we do, or next time, because it's not always a week. This film will be called Alone Time. And this one, I believe I found on YouTube just by I watched like 30 shorts in the last couple of days, just kind of going, I haven't like really just dug around to see what's out there. And I found some interesting stuff. Some of it's too long, so I'm still kind of compiling a list of longer things. But Alone Time will be on our website, horseshowhotdog.com. You can find it there. Otherwise, you can just, I believe, search YouTube for it. And as always, you can go to horseshowhotdog.com to look up old stuff, ratings and reviews. And there's a little button there if you want to send us an email. You got something to say. That's always good, too. And as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And then we will talk towards you. It'll be before you are comfortable, but that's what's going to happen. So anyway, we'll talk to you later. I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Did you see what they did with the Spaceballs panel at Comic-Con? It was super
I did not.
Cute.
Yeah, it was lovely.
They had, so after the fact, they said that the reason they had the panel really was to bring Rick Moranis in and show him how much people love him. Because
that's a great idea.
He really has no perception of how beloved he has become in his absence. So they put like, I guess like a bunch of people in the Darth helmet. And then they had like people combing the audience trying to find Darth helmet. And then they find Rick Moranis. He takes the helmet off. He's getting ready to do more jokes. And people are like hollering for him so loud that he can't even speak.
Awesome.
It's,